Welcome to season 3, episode 34 of the Endotechno podcast. I'm Alan Halliwell, venture partner at leading early stage Indonesian VC, AC Ventures, and founder of startup consultancy Gizmo Advisors. Now, across our no less than 110 episodes of the Endotechno podcast, we've had the privilege of speaking with startups that we would call the native sons and daughters of Indonesia, referring to companies that were founded domestically and have since grown with an exclusive focus on the Indonesian market. We've also interviewed leadership of companies that have achieved dominance in other markets, whether they're Western markets such as North America and Europe or China, and have since extended their businesses to Indonesia's massive and burgeoning market. Today, we will explore the case of a fintech company originally established in the Philippines, which, having become a category leader there, has since expanded into Indonesia with its business. Miko Perez and Adrian Lorenzo are the founder and country manager director of Indonesia, respectively, of Ayana, now one of Southeast Asia's leading platforms, which is committed to enabling digital finance and commerce for Asia's middle class and MSME entrepreneurs. Thanks so much for joining us today, guys.
Happy to be here.
Fantastic. Now, Miko, where are you calling in from today?
I'm calling in from Manila.
Got you. And Adrian, I assume you're in Jakarta today?
Yes, I'm in Jakarta right now.
Fantastic. Now, gents, it looks like Ayana is bucking the trend and actually is growing faster during the pandemic. And even now, in spite of the grim forecasts of economic recession that I see in the headlines on a daily basis, can you tell us what Ayana does in a nutshell? And how you have managed to grow in spite of the challenging economic conditions?
First of all, thank you for having us again here on your podcast. It's really a privilege for us. Now, in a nutshell, Ayana is first and foremost a software company. We actually just have one platform, which is Senda Direct, a B2B2C software as a service that enables digital finance and digital commerce transactions. Omnichannel. When I say omnichannel, it's over the web, over the phone, and even over the counter. We describe our platform as a three-layer wedding cake. The bottom layer is payments, the middle layer is commerce, and the topmost layer is open finance or open banking. So our platform enables financial institutions such as banks, insurers, lenders, cooperatives, as well as consumer brands like FMCG, consumer durable suppliers, to reach the underbanked and underserved, which is the growing middle class, particularly the MSME entrepreneurs across Southeast Asia. We're talking about the sari-sari store owners or the warung owners. And our platform allows these sort of financial institutions and consumer brands to reach this new segment, this growing middle class through digital and hyper-local channels. We actually got a boost during the pandemic because legacy and traditional financial institutions had to accelerate their digital transformation, and we were able to switch them on quickly. At the same time, the pandemic shut down a lot of brick and mortar retail and compelled people to do more online commerce, including my mother-in-law, who never touched a laptop or a tablet until pandemic hit and she needed to do groceries online. And also because of that, consumer brands had to build digital channels and hyperlocal channels to reach their customers because the traditional sales channels through their brick and mortar stores had to be shut down during the pandemic.
Got you. I like the wedding cake analogy. Now, the company's tagline is, quote unquote, enabling digital finance and commerce for Asia's middle class and MSME entrepreneurs. Each of those four major concepts in the statement, one, digital finance, two, commerce, three, middle class, and four, MSMEs, seems frankly to be a segment well populated with competition. What exactly are we doing that is truly differentiated compared to competitors within and across these categories?
Yeah, you're quite right, Alan. All these segments are well-populated competition, and we really have to strive to differentiate ourselves. And this is how we do it. First of all, we are very much razor-focused on the underbanked and underserved, which is the mass market. Second, we focus in particular with MSME entrepreneurs. These are the sari-sari store owners, the warung and toko owners in Indonesia. There are millions of them throughout Southeast Asia, and majority are women. Our goal is to become the MSME entrepreneur's best friend. We give them digital tools to grow their business and to grow their income. Third, we also partner with financial service providers and consumer brands to help them reach this growing market segment. And last but not the least, we focus on working with cooperatives. I think this is one of the key differentiations we have. There are thousands of cooperatives in the Philippines and Indonesia, and most of them still do not have digital platforms to help them serve their members omnichannel. We work very closely with these cooperatives to help their members, many of whom are MSE entrepreneur or aspiring to be entrepreneurs, grow their income with digital tools to help them grow their sales and to connect them with financing and even give them better bargaining power with suppliers. We're not trying to replace the cooperatives. We're helping them serve their members better with digital tools.
Fascinating. I have to say, we have not had any kind of conversation around this cooperative angle with any other participants in the industry. So I'm very much looking forward to exploring that further. Could you guys share with us the three most powerful use case examples of customers using your service?
Yes, certainly. So I can describe three powerful use cases. In the Philippines, we launched, as I mentioned, our platform is called Senda Direct. Senda Direct really is a platform that's been private labeled, so it comes in many variants. And one of the features of Senda Direct is we actually have a POS device that accepts payments through different means.
And POS stands for point of sales, basically what we see when we're paying a checkout at the local warung.
Absolutely. You're correct. At the same time, it also enables ATM withdrawals. Now, in the Philippines and even in Indonesia, not everything has gone digital. Our agents, and these are the MSE entrepreneurs, the sari-sari owners, the warung owners, use our platform to provide what both payment acceptance as well as ATM withdrawals in places where the ATM penetration is very low. And this seems counterintuitive as the economies become more cash light, but there's still a big need for ATM withdrawal services, particularly in the rural areas. And we're seeing a spike in usage here, in spite of the fact that more and more people are using e-money. I think ATMs and cash is still not going to go away, particularly in the rural areas. Adrian could talk more about ASIRA, as lending a service, and how we use that in Indonesia.
So ASIRA, in a nutshell, is basically a lending as a service. So what we do is we try to digitize cooperatives across Indonesia. What we mean by digitize is help them distribute their loans, help also customers apply for loans at a much quicker rate. But at the same time, aside from that, one thing that we noticed, and we'll highlight this a little bit more later on, is we also actually help them by providing them access to cheaper capital, whether that is with local investors here in Indonesia or international investors across Asia. So that's something that we do. And that's something that I think is a really powerful use case, because as far as I know, we're one of the only ones to do that. Again, we're not a P2P, as I'm sure everyone who listens to this podcast know what P2Ps are. But at the same time, we're not just some, how would you say, white label service. Oh, use us, plug and play, and that's about it. We actually interact with our cooperatives, employee cooperatives, and other types of cooperatives, and we assist them, whether that's in capital or whether that's in terms of technology.
Another powerful use case is a variant of Senda Direct called Panalo Mall. Panalo Mall is a social commerce app that we have just launched in the Philippines. It combines the feature of sort of a B2C marketplace where the buyers are the members of the cooperatives and the suppliers are the FMCG brands and those selling consumer durables and even frozen products like frozen chicken, frozen pork, frozen fish. And what Panalo Mall does is it allows us to aggregate demand. So to give the buyers, which are the members of the cooperatives, better bargaining power vis-a-vis the suppliers so they can get better pricing, better stock, better availability of stock. So this is something that we've done. This is something similar to another social commerce app in Brazil called Facili and another social commerce app in Pakistan called Dealcart. But if you look at these three use cases that we just mentioned, the Send and Direct Superboss, the Asira Lending as a Service in Indonesia, Panalo Mall in the Philippines, the unifying theme there is we work with cooperatives, and that's our primary partner.
Thanks for that. Now, we also mentioned that, quote unquote, we increase incomes of MSME entrepreneurs by enabling digital finance and commerce on our apps. Are these entrepreneurs, these small shops, are they our most important constituents?
Yes, MSME entrepreneurs in the Philippines are definitely our most important partners. Likewise, in Indonesia, our most important partners are these cooperatives, because again, we're B2B2C. That is actually also another way that we've been able to grow organically without spending too much on marketing, by using them to broaden our network across the country.
Gotcha. Well, this leads me to my next question. Who therefore owns the end customer, the consumer? Is it ourselves or our MSME entrepreneur client?
For Indonesia, at the end of the day, we do not have direct access to, let's say, the cooperatives, members, or their institutions that they serve, because that's against regulations. Likewise, in the Philippines, the end customer, the one who owns them, is the MSME. Although in the Philippines, we are able to gather in data based on their transaction, their usage of the app, the various omnichannel platforms that they use, such that we can create some data to potentially offer them better products in the future, such as loans, insurance, etc.
Very interesting. So yet another discovery for me. We can't really do a look through to the MSME's customer in Indonesia. Did you say more for legal reasons, Adrian?
Yes, definitely, because we're lending as a service. So how it works is that most of the cooperatives that use our system, they obviously have had customers previous to us, or whenever they acquire new customers under the regulations of the Indonesian banking services, or even under the Ministry of Cooperatives, we do not have direct access to, let's say, an individual's data. However, we are given access such as macro data and so on. We are given that sort of access, but we are not able to get individual access to customers, no.
Understood. Now, how do our services compare and contrast between our initial market of the Philippines and Indonesia?
So in the Philippines, we initially started out working directly with individual MSME entrepreneurs as our agents, and then began working with cooperatives and microfinance institutions that have already aggregated and organized these agents. Whereas in Indonesia, we started working with cooperatives from the beginning. Long story short to that is that we actually intended not just to work with cooperatives, but also with rural banks, or even in some cases here, the provincial banks. However, due to the OJK is basically the financial regulators in Indonesia with so many complex layers of rules and regulations, we actually found that working with cooperatives, they were much more easy to work with, and we didn't have to go through too many, let's say, regulations so that we could start our business immediately.
Very interesting. So a very clear argument for localization of the value proposition to the extent that it's optimized for the younger or newer Indonesian market in our case. Now, tell us a little more about Ayana's more recent arrival into Indonesia. What were the most important elements of getting set up successfully in Indonesia as a startup from the Philippines?
Definitely, we would not have been able to start very quickly and gain traction in Indonesia without having very good Indonesian partners. And that we are lucky to have. We have very good Indonesian partners with very deep connections in the Indonesian bank and insurance industries. Also, they have very good connections within the cooperative movement in Indonesia and with the Ministry of Cooperatives in Indonesia. Not too many people know this, but there are Filipinos who have spent most of their careers in Indonesia, and they actually have been very much sort of part of the growth of the banking and insurance industry in Indonesia. Pat Adrian is one example of that. His father's Filipino, while his mother's Indonesian. Basically, they've been involved with the banking and insurance industry in Indonesia for quite a long time. So they've actually have worked with several of the bank executives who have become later on C-level executives in the banking and insurance industry. And because of that, it's very easy for us to establish relationships with these banks and insurers, and as well as the cooperatives in Indonesia.
So clearly, local expertise and connectivity are extremely important in starting out in a market like Indonesia. Now, you guys claim in your loan business 100% collection, which in my mind should therefore suggest zero NPLs or non-performing loans. And we also claim 100% renewal. How have we achieved this?
Yeah, it's a funny story. Like I said, our intention at the very start when we established our expanded business in Indonesia was to provide lending as a service. But I think anyone listening to this podcast would know this, that aside from providing systems, more important than anything else in developing countries like ours or in the Philippines, Thailand, Vietnam, India, wherever you want to go to, access to capital is even more important because, as we said, still 90% of transactions is done in cash despite the digitalization across the world, really. And with that happening, what we stumbled upon was, okay, they needed more access to capital. So we literally started from a very small number. I remember our very first month where we actually provided access to capital, we only lent out $7,000. To this point now where we're almost doing $1 million+ on a monthly basis. So how we've grown is that we've really paid attention to instilling criteria. I don't think I need to elaborate too much on the criteria that we make when it comes to salary loans, etc. And we really focus on just short term and really small loans. Small loans, you may ask how small, it goes as small as basically $200 or in rupiah, 3 million rupiah. So we don't throw around money like these P2P lenders and everything. We work with these established cooperatives who already have long-time members. We don't work with, let's say, part-time workers. We work with full-time workers and we develop a relationship. And we grow this branch by branch or company by company, region by region. We don't just do it on a mass scale. So that's something that we've done. Yes, it does take more time to grow. I don't think we're going to hit, let's say, the target of $100 million loan book anytime soon. I don't think that's the case. So we really take our time in growing and make sure that the criteria are followed appropriately. And it helps because we're still focusing on just one type of loan currently, which are salary loans.
Understood. So a very measured, cautious, and structured growth explains these 100% collection and 100% renewal rates. A bigger picture question for you guys, how do you secure funds to lend onward to your MSME customers?
Yes, Alan, we've been very fortunate, not only on the equity side in Ayana, but also on the debt side, that we've had some high net worth individuals, family offices, and some smaller corporations, not the big corporations yet, provide us access to debt. That way, we've been able to give them excellent returns for a better part of almost 2 years now. And we continue to, and we have never failed on any payment so far. So I guess that has helped. So far, we haven't really expanded more than a dozen investors. So that's something that we've been able to secure funds to lend onward. And the number, like I said, is still very small. We're still only doing $1 million to $2 million a month, which for Southeast Asia size isn't massive yet. I'm sure you know this. That way, I'm not really worried about us securing funds onward, because even with the current investors, they definitely would support us more as long as we continue to pay them the way we have for the past 2 years.
I can imagine this strategy resonates extremely well with both equity investors and those who are helping you with your lending business, given the, let's just say, very inclement macroeconomic conditions we're seeing today. Now, with your lending as a service business, Adrian, you mentioned that salary loans are likely to be the biggest part of our portfolio. Tell us more of what's happening here.
It's a very, I would say, peculiar case. These types of salary loans, depending on which country you're in, can be called something different. I think in the United States, it's something called early wage access. In some other countries, it's called survival loans. What we like to call it here is, these workers need access to affordable short-term credit to meet seasonal expenses, whether that's paying tuition, school supplies, or sometimes buying inventory or repairing something in their household, etc. Just a reminder here that a lot of these employee cooperatives, it does not mean they don't have your typical loans, such as mortgages or your automobile loan. They do have these loans. What we provide is this really small loans that they need. If you want to think of it like a credit card sometimes. And the reasons why the companies don't provide this is because some of them see it as a performance disincentive, one. And why don't banks provide this? Because it's far too small for the big banks to provide small loans like this. And then again, we are in a somewhat developing country. So I guess the question would be next, but aren't there smaller institutions that provide this? Yes, there are. We're not saying that there aren't, but unfortunately, some of them are these kind of like loan sharks who, if these employees were to borrow from them, they would be paying outrageously high rates. Hence, by us coming in, we've provided something better for them, something that they can easily repay over a 3 to 6 month period, and hence no longer have to go to these shark loans.
Understood. Now, Miko mentioned earlier that we have a digital commerce business, which in the Philippines we call Panalamal, and which Ayana intends to launch in some form in Indonesia next year, called Dampingan. What are we trying to do here specifically in the Indonesian context?
Yes, Alan. First of all, so we launched this in the Philippines very recently. We call it Panalamal. As I mentioned, it's a social commerce app. It brings together both buyers and suppliers. The buyers are the members of the cooperatives, these people who own sari-sari stores or who want to set up their own small retail shops. And we basically allow them to access these items, these FMCG products like rice, sugar, coffee, chicken, pork, and at very good prices because we negotiate on their behalf with the suppliers, the wholesalers, and even the manufacturers themselves. We find that this is one way for us to kind of shift the balance of power from the supplier to the buyer. So by aggregating their demand, if you're working with 3 or 4 different cooperatives, when you go to a supplier, like a big FMCG manufacturer or wholesaler, you can actually create enough volume to bring down the price so that everyone benefits with lower prices. The entrepreneur benefits, and of course, the end user benefits because they can actually sell the products at a much more affordable price. So this is what we're trying to do in the Philippines. We haven't started this in Indonesia, and I think, again, Adrian has shown that we really want to enter a new space in a very sort of measured and, how would you say, prudent manner. I know Indonesia is a little different. We actually have started thinking about how we want to launch this social commerce service in Indonesia. We have a name, we have a brand called Dampingan, which is in Bahasa means to accompany. But probably for the next 2 quarters, we will not launch this first, because we're very much focused on the lending as a service business in Indonesia. But when we do launch it in Indonesia, it will be very much like Panalamal. The idea, again, is it's a marketplace where the buyers and the suppliers can work together and basically allow us to bring these products closer, particularly to the rural areas of the Philippines and Indonesia. But right now, our goal really is to strengthen and to grow the lending as a service business. Eventually, once the lending as a service business is well established, that we're not just offering salary advance loans, but also small business loans or supply chain financing, that's when we can launch the being an Indonesia.
Understood. Now, I am absolutely fascinated by the concept of localization of our solutions amongst different markets, the challenges they involve, but the opportunities they open up if you can master them and address those unique needs that differ from across borders. Again, would our implementations of digital commerce differ significantly between the Philippines and Indonesia? If so, how would they differ? I would assume the payments tools are different, logistics options are different. Any other major differences?
Let me take a stab at this. So in terms of payments, in the Philippines, we already work with the major e-wallets, which is GCash and Maya. We also have open banking APIs to allow bank transfers and instantaneous payments to what we call the BankNet and InstaPay system in the Philippines. In Indonesia, we're familiar with the major e-wallets, include Linkaja, Dana, ShopeePay, GoPay, etc. And we know the people who are managing this e-wallet system, so it's very easy for us to be part of their payment ecosystem in Indonesia. So we're not too worried about that. in my opinion, actually, Indonesia is even more advanced when it comes to creating a more seamless payment infrastructure than the Philippines. So we don't see it as a problem to be able to allow seamless or frictionless payments for our constituents in Indonesia. In terms of logistics, in many ways, the logistics for FMCG is very similar because a lot of this supply chain and the logistics have been established by the big FMCG manufacturers, the Procter & Gamble's, the Unilever's, the Nestle's, the Coca-Cola's of the world, right? And across emerging markets, they pretty much have established this distribution networks. They work with wholesalers, they work with distributors and key accounts and all that. So the logistics is very similar. And also, some of the products are actually produced by the same companies. For example, instant noodle in the Philippines is actually produced by an Indonesian company, of course, under a joint venture with the Filipino company. Now, where there will be a difference, I think, is, for example, in the Philippines, there's a huge and growing demand for pork products. Obviously, in Indonesia, pork would not be very much in demand. But for items like instant noodles, biscuits, confectionaries, and the global FMCG brands, certainly we can work with the same suppliers in both the Philippines and Indonesia.
Just to add a little bit to what Miko said, I think anything in regards to the potential opening of something like Panalo Mall or in our case, Dampingan, would, instead of focusing exactly on what the Philippines do, we think of it as a filler product. Like what Miko said earlier, once we go above salary loans and into other types of loans, or even currently under our employee cooperatives, a lot of these employee cooperatives actually have side businesses aside from their daily jobs, whether it's opening a small little store, or in some cases here called warung, but I think it's a little bit more in size rather than a warung. So actually by providing this system for them, we're just attaching another system onto our lending as a service, which would give even more benefit towards them. That's how I see it, rather than something like an aggregator. Of course, different. So that's again, a difference in the logistics. We tend to bring it here so then we could provide even more services to the customers that we're already serving and not try to create, say, a new customer base. Just focus on what we're already doing, because I think, and I believe this, that we're still just at the beginning of where we are. Like I said, just 2 years ago, we started lending $7,000. Now this year, we're lending at almost $2 million a month. We project to do about $20 million in terms of lending next year.
Got you. Now, both of you mentioned earlier in our session, the success of much of our business depends upon partnering with banks, lenders, insurers, and also leading consumer brands in our markets. What single partnership is most critical to our success?
You know, what we're doing is building a commercial ecosystem of buyers and suppliers. The buyers are the SME entrepreneurs and ultimately the end customers. And the suppliers are the banks, lenders, and consumer brands. The most important partnership for us is with the cooperatives because they are already aggregating the buyers. We don't have to spend a lot of money acquiring them B2C, but because we work with the cooperatives and we are their partners, we give them tools to digitize their business. It allows us to access a much bigger base of borrowers or customers than if we were trying to do it on our own from scratch. By providing them with our digital platforms to enable this omnichannel financial services and commerce, we have access to both the transactions as well as the data. We may not get the personally identifiable data that is basically restricted by law, by data privacy and protection, but we do have aggregate data, which is very valuable for us for sales forecasting and also for product development. So we have proven that embedding ourselves as a SaaS to digitize the operations of cooperatives is a very sticky business model. Once we are embedded and integral to their operations, the partnership tends to be mutually beneficial and long-term.
Gotcha. So let's look back a little at the past. Ayana, as I referenced in my preparatory comments, is indeed considered a pioneer in the Southeast Asian fintech ecosystem. I've personally known of Miko and his success for several years now. What were the challenges you guys had to overcome in the early days?
Yes, Alan, we've known each other for quite some time. And at the risk of carbon dating you and myself, we started quite early in the development of Southeast Asia's digital economy. We definitely had to overcome many challenges and had many setbacks and missteps as we worked hard to achieve product market fit and adoption. When we started, the mobile data networks in the Philippines and even in Indonesia were not as well developed. And smartphones, particularly the early Android handsets, were quite rudimentary and not as pervasive as they are now. So we had to build software that worked on the most rudimentary device. It could work even with poor or no data connectivity. Another challenge we had was finding good product and technology people who could build apps that work well, given the primitive data infrastructure. So many of the technology professionals that were trained and gained experience in the more developed countries had difficulty building apps and user experiences that were constrained by these technology limitations of the data network in the Philippines and Indonesia. They were also constrained or had difficulty localizing the apps to fit the particular circumstances in the Philippines. We had many projects that failed. One project that we had was we actually came up with an instant messenger app called Send a Connect. It supported voice, instant messaging, video on demand, as well as commerce. Then Viber and WhatsApp came out and Send a Connect got disconnected, pun intended. We also built a mobile remittance app called Send a Prime. Again, it was too early as most overseas Filipino workers were still remitting over the counter and there was no open banking APIs to connect their bank accounts to our mobile app. We also did a pilot with Google for a mobile payment app called Beba Pay. It also failed because of a variety of reasons. It was still very early. It was also dependent on NFC-enabled devices. Now, as you now know, a lot of the mobile payments can be done via QR code. And back then, the Android handsets didn't have good cameras that can be used to read QR code to facilitate payment acceptance. Through the years, it has been Send and Direct, our B2B2C transaction platform, and its many variants that have achieved the product market fit and adoption that we currently have. In hindsight, we started very early in the development of Southeast Asia's digital economy, but I guess we would not be where we are now if we didn't go through that journey.
Just to add on to what Miko said, in Indonesia, one of my favorite quotes from working all these years with Miko, and I still think about it till today, is his favorite quote is, "To perform the perfect crime, you must rob a gas store first." I don't know how that's supposed to work on this, but that's literally what happened with us in Indonesia. Like I said, we started literally right before COVID struck. We tried creating the system perfect end-to-end, following all the regulations from the OJK or, like I said, the financial authorities in Indonesia. We worked for 6 months building something where the banks were like, oh, we need this, we need that. When in the end, what we figured out was that, oh, there are these cooperatives who are dying and reaching out, not to us directly, of course, because nobody knew who we were then, but trying to figure out how they could expand their business or how they could get digitalized, but at the same time, more importantly, have access to capital. So by doing that, we struggled early on. COVID struck, and just so happened that one of our first few clients, these cooperatives, needed our system and access to capital. And it just so happened that we were able to provide both. Again, at a very small scale in the beginning, there were many ups and downs, but in the end, it just kept on growing. And thankfully, we are at where we are now. And similar to what happened in the Philippines, we had to learn from our mistakes and we needed time to do that.
Let me just add, what Adrian was referring to is a quote that I would always say, on the way to a perfect crime, you got to rob a few gas stations. You know, we were trying to create this perfect app that was the answer to everything that the bank needed or a lending company or a cooperative needed to digitize their business. But we realized all we needed to do was basically help these cooperatives. Number one, of course, we had to give them a system, but at the same time, they just needed capital. Because the demand for capital was much greater than the supply of capital that they can produce organically.
I have to say, I've always appreciated Miko's humility and particularly his humor. I must say, however, I'm not familiar with your past in bank robbery or actually gas station robbery that you guys just admitted to. And maybe we'll save that for a subsequent podcast, assuming that you're still free. But let's get back to basics. What are our key growth targets for the end of 2023?
Yes, for Indonesia, at our current run rate, we are on track to disburse and collect at the very minimum $20 million. But of course, we are already meeting with more cooperatives, whether that's in the Java region or outside, particularly focusing on some of the more larger industrial estates. So I would say the base is $20 million. As for the Philippines, I'll let Miko comment on that.
For the Philippines, we're working with First Philippine Holdings. It's a listed conglomerate that invested in our Series A round to launch our lending as a service business in their industrial estate, which hosts over 60,000 workers. It's in a province south of Manila. Also, we're launching lending as a service with several cooperatives across the Philippines. We project generating at least $62 million in GPV and $7.4 million in revenue in 2023, and $197 million in GPV and $31.3 million in revenue in 2024. If you look at what we're doing, we are accompanying SME entrepreneurs on a journey. We started out enabling payments, and then now we're enabling commerce and loans. From here, we can now introduce insurance, savings, and retail investment products. There's still a lot of upside. There are thousands of cooperatives in Indonesia and the Philippines and millions of MSME entrepreneurs. And yes, of course, all these segments are already very competitive, but markets are so huge that I don't think any one startup or even a very large technology unicorn can monopolize serving all these millions of customers or entrepreneurs. So we have proven that helping MSME entrepreneurs succeed is the key to our success. I remember listening to your podcast, Alan, when you were interviewing Stephanie Davis, the head of Google Southeast Asia, and she said something that really resonated with me. So I think the reason we are having the success that we have now is because we have really deepened our engagement with our partners and customers. I say deepen our engagement. We started out providing digital tools. Then we decided, oh, you need capital? We'll help you source capital. Now you need access to low-price FMCG products. We'll give you low-price SMG products. So everything is focused to really help MSME entrepreneurs grow their business, gain access to financing, gain access to products that they can sell, and also to really grow their business and income. These are the customers that we have, the co-ops and the MSE entrepreneurs that the co-ops are serving.
I appreciate that evolution of product that you just recounted. And it sounds like you have plotted quite a bit for the future, along with quite a bit of growth. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us today. Really cool to hear the unique story, in the case of Ayana, of a leader in the Philippines fintech sector, grafting its successful solutions into Indonesia, but also undertaking very significant localization and customization to root itself successfully in Indo. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for having us, Alan, and hope to see you soon, whether in Indonesia or the Philippines.
Likewise, thank you, Alan, for having us.
You guys are very welcome. We hope our listeners have enjoyed today's episode. As always, please consider sharing any feedback that you have about the Indo Techno Podcast with us. Terima kasih. Sampai jumpa lagi.